Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. This is your host, Kim. And today I have with me a guest, Ryan. Thank you for being with me this week. Well, go ahead and introduce yourself. I'm excited to have you here. Very excited.
Well, howdy. I'm happy to be here.
Before you get too excited, sir, I want to ask you the question that I ask everyone, which is, how did you come to libertarianism? Were you always a libertarian, or did you start out at a different political background and became a libertarian?
That was certainly a journey. I grew up in a conservative evangelical Christian home. So I carried that for a long time. I grew up, I listened to, Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. But then the crazy point came in 2008 when I actually voted for John McCain, thinking that, I just need to choose the lesser of two evils. And in my brain, he was the lesser of two evils. And then immediately following that election, like literally that night, I went home and thought, what have I done? What kind of a person am I? Like, I suddenly was just thinking, what if he actually wins and does horrible things, starts wars and kills people? And I'm just like, this is bad. I don't want that on my hands. I was like, what am I doing? So I decided I am just stepping out politically. I'm not caring. I'm just going to just read and study for as long as it takes until I figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. Because clearly this whole listening to talk radio and then voting for the lesser of two evils isn't doing the trick. So I started reading all sorts of stuff. And I was actually led there from Glenn Beck and some resources I was going to. And those actually, oddly enough, pointed me to Alex Jones. So I went to his website for the first time and saw him interviewing that presidential candidate, Ron Paul. I said, Ron Paul, why would he be on this crazy guy's, radio show? This is interesting. I'll need to look this guy up. So I started reading Ron Paul. I got his book, Gold, Peace, and Prosperity. And read it and thought, oh, this is neat. This guy knows what he's talking about. And I saw the foreword was written by this dude named Murray Rothbard. There we go. Yes. Yeah, so I looked up Murray Rothbard, started reading his work, and I was absolutely toast. It completely, it brought me around. And that was on a political level, but at the same time, I was still in the evangelical Christian church. So as I was reading all this Murray Rothbard, I got to his Conceived in Liberty series of books. And I was in the second, I think it was, volume of that when he was talking about early American history and the Pilgrims. And, that was crazy. When the Quakers came over and they started, killing them and torturing them and beating them and doing just the most horrible things to them in the world. And the Quakers, the only thing they were trying to do was actually live out the words of Jesus in an explicit and literal way. They didn't want to take up arms against people because Jesus said to love your enemies. And they said that you could have a personal relationship with Jesus. Whoa, 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 society will collapse if you have that. You come to Jesus through the church, through your baptism and your paying your your taxes, which were your tithes at that time. And as I was reading that, I had this aha moment where I thought, I don't ever want to be on that side. I don't ever want to be on the pilgrim side, the ones who are just so completely confused, basically because of power or tradition or whatever, that I would sit back and that I would be that confused. I couldn't believe it, that they were actually killing people who were just trying to be they were killing their own. These were Christians, And it blew my mind. And I went to church the next week, was sitting there, and they were praying, Lord, help the troops to kill those Muslims. And I was thinking, wait, I'm feeling that something's wrong here. And then I noticed the flags, and suddenly they seemed a lot more prominent in the front of the church and the everything. And, oh, it just occurred to me. I was like, wait, oh, I'm doing this wrong. That's when I left the evangelical church. So that was my kind of my spiritual awakening, that something was very wrong. And that's when I started, just like I was following Murray Rothbard on the political front, I started really seeking what it meant to live out an explicit life like Jesus. And that's what brought me around spiritually. So now I'm in the Mennonite Church. We're a fascinating group of people. But you find a lot more anarchists in the Mennonite Church than most denominations. So it's a good place to be, because if you're a pacifist, as the Mennonite Church in general is, it by default leads to anarchism in many people, you know? Because if you can't take up arms against somebody, you can't force them to give them your money or to do anything else for you. So it negates the existence of a violent government.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Now, I've got a lot of questions for you on that because, okay, now I'm going to, of course, nobody...
I forgot to mention, I am a pastor, so that gives me credibility.
Ah, gives you lots of credibility, which is why I invited on, now I haven't mentioned the subject of the podcast, and Ryan, so gracefully and wonderfully as a pastor, what do people call you, Pastor Ryan?
No, not in the least.
Oh, they just call you Ryan?
You bet. Oh, it was Jesus said, don't call people father. Don't call people by special names. We're just people. You know, that's even what Paul did when he went to the original 12 apostles in Jerusalem. They were lifted up and everyone, wow, the apostles. In Galatians, Paul said, yeah, and I went and visited the big guys in Jerusalem. People call them the pillars, whatever. It makes no difference to me. We're all human.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, that's the way that St. Paul saw it. Then, yeah, I think we're, well, there I went and called him saint. But still, yeah, the church isn't supposed to be a place of titles and positions.
Yeah, we shouldn't be idolizing people. I mean, definitely we're in a climate where people idolize politicians all the time. And even as much as I say I love me some Rothbard, you know, when I say Rothbard, I'm not going like, oh, the magical Rothbard, you know, and like lifting up like Man, Economy, and State, like, you know, come on, you know. Even Ron Paul, you know, I'm not like going, oh, you know, come on, you know. I don't idolize people.
Isn't that what you're supposed to do? I thought everyone had to do that. I thought that was part of getting in the club. You have to, you know, worship every word out of Ron Paul's mouth.
No, no, no. It's just, you know, he does great things for liberty and has done and continues to do great things for liberty. You know, should, of course, you know, be respected for that good model. But, of course, we're not supposed to go, oh, my goodness, everything he does is amazing. You roll out the red carpet. That's just, you know, no human being should be held up to that sort of, you know, pedestal. He's not Jesus.
Right.
But, you know, but of course, the subject that for this podcast is, Christianity. And I'm going to have to admit, and as the title of this podcast is Newborn Libertarian, obviously I'm the newborn. I'm on month 6, and as Christian always says, is that what is the difference between a minarchist and then, you know, an ANCAP or a voluntarist, as another term for people who would prefer to live in a voluntary society that is not coercive and filled with governmental state coercing and forcing everybody into everything. You know, what's the difference? Is 6 months. And I guess we'll see about that. But I have to admit, when I got into libertarianism, it was kind of a tumultuous sort of thing because I got in and had no clue what a minarch and anarchist was, and I was so confused. And one of the things that I got confused with is I thought when you became a libertarian, you just had to abandon any sort of belief in any kind of like belief system. And I definitely don't say religion because I've never been a religious human being because I always thought it was a man-made sort of thing. But I thought any sort of spirituality, anything believing in God or Jesus was just a no-no suddenly in libertarianism. So that just seemed like you just had to be an atheist out of nowhere. And that was kind of distressing for me because at some point, of course, it was kind of a rocky road. Of course, when I came out of the closet was one of my first questioning moments of my beliefs because, you know, we all know, we've read the passages, of course, in the Bible and had people tell you, you know, homosexual offenders will not inherit the kingdom of God. We've seen all that. And I've had to go through all that. And I did that at about 24 and then still came out on the other side going, nope, still believe in God. Still think Jesus was the man that lived a pretty exemplary. And in my mind, as I continue on a very libertarian life of, nope, you just live this way. This is just how we do things. And nope. So I'd still say I couldn't shed my belief if I tried. It's not something I want to do. And then as I started to get further into hanging out with everybody and getting to know you, it was nice to find somebody that actually, you know, is a pastor. And that is why I'm excited to have you on and ask you a few questions. So, leading into that, I'm going to have to ask you the first question, which you sort of start to answer was, I'm going to have to ask, does the Bible at all advocate for any kind of, a certain type of government, do you think?
No. Quite simply, no. You know, there's all sorts of governments mentioned in the Bible. There's all sorts of forms of government shown in the Bible. But there is no specific time when a specific form is given as what God wants for the rest of us. We like to take, a lot of us in the church take a lot of the Bible to be prescriptive when it's actually descriptive. As in, descriptive means it's describing something. As in, I believe the whole Bible is inspired by God, and I believe that every word is in there because he wants it to be in there. But that doesn't mean that everything inside of the Bible is something that God is telling us we're supposed to emulate or do or be or accept, even, you know, depending on what the passage is, because sometimes God shows us people who are completely wrong. And we're not supposed to, just because it's in the Bible, believe that, therefore we should, no, because the Bible makes it clear this person was wrong. So that's the beauty of context in the Bible. And when you look at the context in the Bible, you find that a lot of, well, back to the difference between descriptive and prescriptive. We can't take a lot of these things to be prescriptive, as in God saying, this is the way I want you to be. Now, you know, we do read in the Bible where the first time government is mentioned. Now, that's in Genesis 9. If you remember, before that, it was called the dispensation of conscience. Okay, at that point, people were doing what was right in their own eye, as the Bible says. And then what did that lead to? Well, that led to violence. People were killing each other. People weren't doing, they weren't interacting in positive ways with each other. They were killing. It was horrible. Bloodshed everywhere. So what we read in the Bible is that God sent a flood in order to cleanse the earth, basically, in order to stop that. He said, basically, humanity's lost. And that's not why he created the world. He didn't create it for us to all be just killing each other. It was horrible. But after the flood, when God put the rainbow in the sky, and he told Noah that he would never flood the earth again, we read where God says, from now on, whoever sheds human blood by other humans must his blood be shed. For in God's image, God made humankind. It's the first time you read of the basic concept of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. You know, you get what you deserve. If you shed someone's blood, you get your blood shed as well. So that's the first mention of that in the Bible. And that's followed by a dispensation called the dispensation of human government. And that's the first time you do see people organizing into governments. Now, those weren't very good governments. If you look at all the old Sumerian governments and the things in Babylon, and you read of a number of those in the Bible, but none of those are you know, in any way lifted up by the Bible as something great. On the contrary, most of the systems you see are really awful, like in Canaan, where they were sacrificing children and doing all sorts of horrible, awful, disgusting things. Now, you do see God gave Israel a law. He gave them their own special system of government. And the interesting thing is, that system of government was miles and miles beyond anything at that time. In the Jason Stapleton podcast, he often talks about the importance of baby steps. Well, if you really want to look at it, the Mosaic Law was baby steps, getting away from that bizarre way of living life where you're, you know, where women had no value whatsoever. You know, men would trade them like property, where parents would sacrifice their own children. Cool thing is, when you read in the Mosaic Law, you see, you know, God puts protections in there for women, for children, for all sorts of things. But it's a step along the way. That's what I see the whole Old Testament as. It's God leading people closer and closer to the truth, which is Jesus. He's the full expression of God's will. Either way, there's no point in the Bible where God says that the Mosaic Law is for all of us. Never. Not once. Yeah. And, okay, I bet you're going to ask about Romans 13, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for reading my brain. Reading the brain, man.
Reading the brain and the questions that I sent you that I'd be willing to, that I'd be interested in answering for you.
Just go ahead and tell the audience that I have some prepared questions that you gave me, but these are questions that I would ask anyway, so just go right on into it then.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, I feel like I have to go into Romans 13 here, because that's really what it always comes down to. If you remember, Hitler said his favorite passage was Romans 13. He talked about it an awful lot, and people all throughout the centuries have. Okay, because Romans 13 is the passage where Paul says by God that all governments on the earth are instituted by God, and therefore we must serve them, love them, pay our taxes, do everything. So regardless of whether there's a specific form of government in the Bible that is lifted up, in Romans 13, people use that as an excuse for basically any kind of government because they just say, well, it was instituted by God. See Romans 13. So if we're really going to talk about this, we really do need to look at Romans 13. Mm-hmm. I loved Romans 13. Romans 13 is what really pushed me over the edge toward anarchism. Okay. Let's go ahead and I'm going to read this for you, if you don't mind. Oh, wow. Romans 13, verse 1. We read, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except by God's appointment, and the authorities that exist have been instituted by God. Uh-oh. Sounds pretty bad. Okay, so we just have to believe No, wait. There's more verses. Verse 2. So the person who resists such authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers cause no fear to good, for good conduct, but for bad. Do you desire to fear authority? Do good, and you'll receive its commendation. For it's God's servant for your good. Here we go. But if you do wrong, be in fear, for it does not bear the sword in vain. Here's the money quote. It is God's servant to administer retribution on the wrongdoer. I'll read that one more time. Government, okay? It is God's servant to administer retribution on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it's necessary to be in subjection, not only because of the wrath of the authorities, but also because of your conscience. For this reason, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants devoted to govern. Pay everyone what is owed, taxes to whom taxes are due, revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, honor to whom honor is due. Okay, so there we go. All government is in place by God, so we just need to shut up and take it, right? Context is everything when you're looking at the Bible.
So you're telling me you should read like the other verses around it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
That's my favorite, is when people just say, oh, just this verse. I'm like, you do realize there are other verses around that, right? That's kind of important. You just read the rest. That's always important.
Romans doesn't start with chapter 13. And in fact, when Paul wrote it, he didn't mark chapter 13. Someone else did. So I'm going to read you a few more verses. Let's see what was the lead up to that. Why did Paul go into that in Romans chapter 13, all right? We read in Romans 12, starting in verse 14, bless those who persecute you. That sounds like Jesus. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. And do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not be conceited. Do not repay evil for evil. That's good. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Consider what is good before all people. And if possible, so far as it depends on you, live at peace with everybody. Do not avenge yourself, dear friends, but give place to God's wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Rather, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing this, you will be heaping burning coals on his head. That was a good thing. Just don't think that God's saying, do it so that they feel really bad. No, it's not what he's saying. Verse 21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's key. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So we just read that we're supposed to live at peace with one another. We're supposed to help and love and treat each other with respect, okay? We're supposed to even treat those people who treat us badly good. Imagine that. God says, don't take retribution. You know, don't, what does he say? Vengeance is mine. Do not avenge yourselves. So the question is, if you're not supposed to avenge yourselves, then what's God talking about? God just said, I will repay. What does he mean by that? Then we go into Romans 13, okay? Which this is what God is, this is the lead up to Romans 13, okay? It says, you don't do it yourself. Here, Romans 13. There's no authority except by God's appointment, and the authorities that exist have been instituted by God. So in verse 4, it says, if you do wrong, be in fear, for it does not bear the sword in vain. It's God's servant to administer retribution on the wrongdoer. Okay, so the governments of the world have authority, and that authority comes from God. God has given them authority, but it's not a blanket authority to do anything and everything they want to. The authority he gave them is very specific. It does not bear the sword in vain. It is God's servant to do what? To administer retribution on the wrongdoer. What does government have authority to do? Retribution on the wrongdoer. That's it. That's all that you can get out of this passage. That is the only thing they have authority to do. Okay? So when it says that there's only authority, or there is no authority except by God's appointment, and the authorities that exist have been instituted by God, yeah. That means that those authorities who are administering retribution on the wrongdoer, they are under God's authority. They are the ones who are doing what God said human government can do.
Would that okay? be like, would that be where minarchists latch on and be like, okay, then that's where we can have our limited government that just serves retribution?
That is completely fair. That is a completely fair way to look at this, okay? I won't say it's best, and I'll talk about that in a little bit.
I knew you would say that.
But that is that's a fair way to look at it. But the main thing is, if a government is stealing from its own people, if a government is telling them how they can and cannot live their life, remember in chapter 12, it says it's talking about your life, your property. You know, it says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Okay, so we're not supposed to, where is it? Thought it said something about property. Okay, well, that's earlier. Regardless, the point is, we don't repay evil for evil. And the government, they have a very specific bit of authority, which is to punish evildoers. And that's it. If they are doing something else, for example, if they are taking our stuff, if they're hurting us, if they're treating us evil, like we read in chapter 12, remember, the government's supposed to be the answer to evil. Government's not supposed to be the one doing the evil. They're supposed to be the one taking out retribution on the evildoers. But if the government is themselves doing the evil, then they're acting outside of God's authority. They're acting on their own authority. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you cannot possibly say that they are under God's authority. You cannot say that God is the one who instituted them to do the things they're doing, to do the wars, to do the taxation, to do all those other things. Okay? If you have a government who is doing just this, just the simple minarchist government, then yes, you could point to that and say, yes, that government is acting on God's authority. Well, now, does that surprise you that I went there?
Yeah. Well, I was like, of course, if as usual, if they're, not following God's will, then as somebody who is following God, then of course you would be, within the right to say, hey, they're not acting in God's will. And of course, if God is leading people to say, hey, we need to take steps to abolish this government, get rid of them, and see where God is leading to put others.
Well, that's the interesting thing. This could be a recipe for revolution, if you took it in a vacuum. But we just read in chapter 12, do not repay evil for evil.
Well,
so if they're evil, that doesn't mean that we can then start doing evil.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do evil to them. If you're going to just take them out, if they're working against God's will, then that does not mean we're going to suddenly act against, if they're aggressing against the people, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you cannot be in power if you're not doing God's will and you're aggressing against the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, the reason that we read this here, the reason that Paul talked about it, and the reason Peter talked about it, okay, they talked about, yes, government exists to do this. But their point was not to give us Christians reason to rebel. Because we as Christians do have a higher calling.
Mm-hmm.
That takes me to kind of what I was going to say next, which was, we like to think of God in terms of what is right and what is wrong, what is allowed and what is not allowed. If you turn on radio shows or get on the internet or read, everyone's talking about whether something's lawful or not lawful, whether it's right or wrong, whether it's allowed or not allowed. That's the way we like to talk about God. But the fact of the matter is, that's not the way life is. Okay? When you and I are talking together, we're not, in terms of our actual lives, our questions are rarely what is right and what is wrong, because we generally know in our conscience what is right and what is wrong. The point, what we really discuss is what is better and what is best in our life. As in, if you have a family member, a friend, or somebody who's doing something destructive, okay? You say, no, this isn't best. I want what's best for you because I care about you and I love you. And that's the cool thing about what Jesus came to do. What Jesus came to do was to show us what is best. We aren't called as Christians just to do what's okay. We're called as Christians to push for the very best. What you had in the Old Testament, for example, was eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Everybody get together and just, if someone hurts you, you hurt them. And if someone takes you, then you take them. And if they hit you, you hit them. But imagine if we actually lived that way. Imagine if you're walking down the hall and someone bumps you and your thought is, well, I have to repay them equally since they bumped me. So you turn around and, bump them back. Or someone accidentally hurts your property. So you say, well, now I have to hurt their property. Like, that's not the way we work. Okay. Let's read. Where is the passage I'm looking for? I like Matthew.
Seems like
the point is, in Matthew chapter 5, at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus first goes through the Beatitudes, all right? Then he starts talking about violence. He starts talking about fighting. He starts talking about other things. But he says this, he repeats this over and over throughout the sermon. He says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, but I say to you, do this." As in, you heard that it was said, you know, to those of old, eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth or whatever. But I say to you something else. I'm saying to you something better. Now I'm going to quickly read from Matthew chapter 19, all right? This is at a point where all the smartest and the best people, the people who are part of the state church, basically, the people who were empowered by the Jewish religious system, okay, were trying to do everything in their power to stop Jesus. They were trying to trick him, to trap him in his words, okay? So in Matthew chapter 19, you read, "Then some Pharisees came to him in order to test him." Okay, they wanted to catch him. They asked, "Hey, is it lawful to divorce a wife for any cause?" And he answered, saying, "Have you not read that from the beginning the Creator made them male and female? And he said, 'For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, and he will be united with his wife, and the two will become one flesh.' So they are no longer two, but they are one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." Okay, so that Jesus just gave the ideal, okay? Two people get married. They come together. They become one. And what God has joined together, let no one separate. That's the ideal. But that's not the end of this passage. So then they came back and they said to him, "Hey, well, then why did Moses command us to give a certificate of dismissal and to divorce her?" Uh-oh. If God commanded that they allow, you know, divorces, then clearly divorces are fine with God, right? Verse 8, Jesus said to them, "Well, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because of your own hard, sinful hearts. But from the beginning, it was not this way." Now, my point here is not to, you know, go into talking about divorce. My point here is to say that what Jesus is interested in, what Jesus has always been interested in, is what is best and what is ideal. In this case, God made people, okay? And they get married, two become one. It's a beautiful, amazing thing. And what God has joined together, he doesn't want that to separate. But guess what? People aren't, they don't always do what's right. Sometimes we do awful things, sinful things, and guilt and shame and stuff gets into the relationship and something happens, okay? And it gets ruined. That's not God's ideal. But guess what? Because that does happen, because that's the reality of humanity in the Old Testament, God did say, yes, if you're going to divorce, then here's the method, here's the process, here's the way to do it. Because if you remember at that time, of course, a man could just say, "I'm through with you," and kick his wife out on the street. No, now there was a process and the women were actually protected. But that gets back to the point of whether something in the Bible is prescriptive or descriptive. You can look in the Old Testament and see, oh, look, God even gave them instructions on how to do a divorce. Therefore, God's, you know, thinks that divorce is great. Well, God's ideal hasn't changed. But the point is, God's not working with perfect people. And people not being perfect sometimes can't be at the ideal. And God provided a way that for them to deal with the sinfulness, you know, with the unfortunate circumstances of humanity. But just because God gave them those instructions didn't change the ideal. All right? Mm-hmm. When Jesus came, he came to show us the ideal. What's the ideal? It's love your neighbors. It's treat everybody good. It's do to others what you want them to do to you. Here in Luke 6, we read, "I say to you that are listening," this is Jesus, "love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. To the person who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other as well. And to the person who takes away your cloak, don't withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you." That's awesome. That's the ideal. Jesus came to show us not what we could and couldn't do. He came to show us the ideal, came to show us what is best. So as Christians, if all we're asking is what's allowed, then we're going to miss the point, just like those Pharisees. They said, well, divorce is allowed, therefore that must mean that it's great, you know, no problem there. But that wasn't the ideal, you know. So when we read in Romans 13, that God allows human government, that God allows, that God has given authority to human government to take retribution against evildoers. That's allowed. God allows that. God allows government to do that. But from what I read in the Bible, from what I read even in Romans 12, I know that that is not God's ideal. God's ideal is not people, you know, having a system of government where it is just out for justice, the eye for the eye, the tooth for the tooth. They're repaying evil with evil. That's the best a government can do, is repay evil with evil, as in stop the evildoer, you know, basically do something bad to the bad person because they did something bad. That's the best the government can do. But that doesn't change the ideal. We know what the ideal is, which is love your neighbor, which is even love your enemy. That's pretty crazy. Hmm. So what I as a Christian want to do is I will look at Romans 13 and I will see, sure, God allows human government. God allows human government to take retributive action against evildoers. But that doesn't change the ideal. The ideal is not to repay evil for evil. The ideal is not to have a group of oligarchs who take your money and redistribute it. It's not to have a group of people who have a big military who goes to war because they have nothing better to do. You know, that is not God's ideal. So what I, as a Christian and as a, people would call me an anarchist, voluntarist, and anarcho-capitalist, whatever. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to push for the ideal. I'm trying to push for what's best. I'm trying to push for, both as a Christian and as a person, what is best for humanity. And even though a government, a minarchist government is allowed, I don't believe that is the ideal. What do you think?
Well, my whole stance basically is, I mean, in theory, I would definitely love, I mean, I, as I come to understand voluntarism, I don't have anything against it. I mean, I've gotten to understand it more. And of course, my co-host is very proud ANCAP, and has, of course, explained things to me, but my thing is I continue to push for limited government because it gets me closer and closer to liberty, and if I can get to a voluntarist society, I'd be more than happy for that, because I do think it is probably the freest society we can get to. The point is we are incredibly, incredibly far away from that right now, and we both can see that. And at this point, especially as a big L libertarian in the Libertarian Party, here in Nevada, and getting ready to run as a candidate, I'm working toward getting to a limited government. And yes, I am a constitutional conservative, basically. One that definitely does not have the ideal, like, because some get the confusion. It sounds more like they are Tea Partiers to me, where they seem to be libertarians with really confused idea about military. To me, I am not. I'm definitely a non-interventionist.
Yay. But
I cannot. You cannot get me to, you know, believe that. And of course, you know, when I go back in history, because some of the arguments we get, it's like, well, what about, you know, all these wars back in the past, if the U.S. wouldn't have got involved in that? And I'm like, you know, we can go back and talk about things in history, but this is the year 2016. We cannot go back and continue to try to use the past to justify why we are all in, you know, in Syria and all that sort of stuff, and all this stuff we're doing right now. The intervention we have right now is awful. So there's no way I can be an interventionist and try to make those excuses for now. But my whole view is, at this point, I'm trying to get in to try to limit government as far as possible. And yes, I do have a love for the Constitution. I mean, it is definitely not a document that is a living document. I will never be convinced that this is some sort of document that just can be interpreted. The framers had a point for it, and yes, I do know enough about the history behind it to know they did create it, and then somewhere around, like, George Washington said, second term, he let Alexander Hamilton just talk in one ear and just completely just trample on the Constitution and open the door for all the Constitution trampling we have now.
Tell me about this Constitution. Is that something you signed?
Nope. However, this is my point with that. Since it is the document that we have now, and it's the document that they supposedly, because Obama, the person who supposedly got, an education, involving teaching the Constitution that he professes to know and tramples all over the crap of that thing with his executive orders, and, nobody seems to know how to interpret the darn thing in an originalist way. My whole point is trying to get it back to its original intent and knowing how to actually interpret it and saying, okay, this is actually meant to limit the government all the way to its smallest size. And then when we get that far, how much farther can we push that? Can we push it all the way to the fact that, can we get to the point where we have no government at all? I want to get it to the point where we have the smallest government using a document that people claim that they know and understand, because if I try to pull that sheet out and try to put something else in place, I feel like nobody would go for that right about now. But if I use a document that they claim to already know, and all the people that run around like zombies, at least they know what a constitution is. If I can use the ability to understand that document right now and interpret it the way the framers do and limit the government, get it closer to liberty now, and then totally get rid of the government from there. If we can get all the way to liberty and just get rid of it from there, if we can get there, I'm fine with that. But the plan is, I'm not sure if we'll get there in my lifetime, but if I can shrink the government as far as possible right now, that's my entire goal. That is why, that's just me.
Well, think of all the governments in the world that you know about. Do any of them fit inside the Romans 13 constraints? Are any of them actually acting under the authority given them by God? Or are they acting under their own illegitimate authority? Have they become gods unto themselves, granting themselves authority, which he never, ever said they had authority to do? Is there a single government that fits in that Romans 13?
I would have to think. Does anybody even know who God is anymore? Does anybody even follow the God of the Bible in the first place? At this point, do they even profess to even know who he is, or have they created him into something they decided they like?
Well, my point with that is simply there is not a single legitimate government on the face of the earth right now, at least as far as I know, maybe in some small communities somewhere that I don't necessarily see, but they aren't. They have literally become gods unto themselves. They see themselves as gods, and they give themselves authorities which he never gave to them to do. They don't have authority to be committing evil against us. He said you have authority to administer retribution on the wrongdoer. Are you and I the wrongdoer, Kim? Is that why we're being punished, by having them stick their hands in our coffers and take our money and tell us what we can and cannot do? Tell me that it's illegal for me to capture rainwater falling off my roof. I mean, that tells me I'm not allowed to move, to drive without legitimate papers. That I'm not allowed to buy gas without paying the government for
they
the privilege
certainly
of being able to
are
buy
not
it.
Allowed to
you
do
know,
to
it's
do that sort of
so
thing.
Completely absurd.
It's awful. And you know how we got there? The people allowed them to get there. They just allowed
they didn't
them to
vote hard enough.
Well, the problem is they voted hard. They voted hard, all right. Like morons. Voted in just without thinking. They stopped saying, all right, we're just going to vote in people who sound like they are doing the right thing. We're going to stop reading anything. We're going to stop thinking. We're going to stop doing anything. We're going to stop holding people to any sort of principle or thought or anything. We're just going to vote them in. We're not going to hold them to any principles, any laws, any constitutions, anything.
Well, you'd mentioned how people create their own God. And it is really unfortunate that is the truth. Because I know who God is. In fact, I know God because I know Jesus. And of course, you know, any of your listeners who are not Christian, you know, they would disagree with me, most likely. But regardless, I as a Christian can say that because it's what I believe. But I read in the Bible, I read in Hebrews and I read in Colossians that Jesus is the express image of God. As in, when God wants us to be able to look at one person, one thing, and say, that's what I'm like, God points to Jesus and says, you're supposed to look at Jesus. So for anybody in government or anybody in life or anyone listening to this, if you want to know what God's like, look at Jesus. Look at what Jesus said. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. Like, that's what God is like. Okay? We don't judge God by what some people wrote in the Old Testament. We don't judge God by what the evangelical church, the majority of them say God is, as they're praying blessings over wars and destruction. We don't judge God by that. We judge God simply by the life Jesus lived. And if we come to a part in the Bible which gives a different view of God that seems to contradict our view of God through Jesus, we know that our understanding of that passage is wrong. Not that our understanding of God is wrong, because God is clear that Jesus is the clear image of God. So, yeah, that's what I have to say.
Well,
and you'd mentioned also earlier, you know, how difficult it was for you coming out and such, especially, you know, in relation to the church. I just wanted to point out that Jesus loves you more than you could ever understand. And there is absolutely nothing on the entire face of the earth you could ever possibly do to make him love you any less under any circumstances. And the same is true for every single human being.
Well, that's basically where I came out on the side of things when I came out. How many times can I use the term came out? But, I mean, that's the thing. I can't really let go of Jesus, and he certainly isn't going to let go of me. So, yeah, I just tell that people it's my thing to deal with when I go home, is between me and God on what I do with my life while I'm here. It is not for anybody else to decide for me. That is a conversation I will be having with God when I get home. So,
and that's correct. And that's exactly the way it should be. Once again, we get caught on this right and wrong, when everything is actually our conversations with God are about what's best. What do you want from me, God? You know, that's Jesus was always having the conversation of what's best. And that's the same question we should be asking. We should be asking God, and we should be asking ourselves at any time.
Speaking of best, now you had one question that is good because this is a question libertarians get, and we can tackle this one from various angles, whether it's from a Christianity angle, whether it's from all sorts of angles that you had here is, of course, especially with Bernie Sanders and his message. But yeah, when you talk about Jesus, talking about feeding the hungry and clothing the poor. Now, if you follow Jesus, how could us as libertarians oppose welfare programs, and libertarians, we get crushed for that all the time, because that's one of the things we want to do with is welfare programs, because the welfare state is horrible. And I have many reasons as to why it's horrible. And one of these days I'll share the story of my mom, who is starting to become more libertarian. As my mom right now thinks she's a libertarian because she hates taxes. She told me this about 3 hours ago. But she told me a wonderful story about how she was on welfare, and she had three jobs because she had me and my brother, and she was working three jobs to try to take care of us, and she's like on welfare, and they were telling her just how much she can do to stay on welfare, but she's trying to take care of us, and they told her she had to sell her car. Because in order to stay on what, she's like, well, what? Okay, so in order for me to, like, I'm barely making enough, but you don't want me to succeed, but I just need to, like, I want to get off welfare, but I just need to be able to, like, hang on just enough until I make enough. Like, but you're telling me I have to sell my car. Like, there is no, like, in between where I can just hang on enough until I can succeed. I don't want to hang on while succeeding, but can I succeed, please? And then get off welfare, but you tell me I have to sell my car. But anyway, now, long story short to say, you know, there's reasons behind why libertarians oppose welfare, because there are drawbacks. But anyway, now on to answering the question there.
You asked about Bernie Sanders. All right. Well, first I'll quickly point to Romans 12, which we looked at briefly. Okay. Do not repay evil for evil. I would say that hunger, people who are hungry, people who are in terrible situations, there is an element of evil about that. We know inherently it's wrong. We don't like to see people starving, people hurting, you know, people in prison. We don't like seeing that stuff. So the question is, what is our response to be supposed to be? You just read in the Bible that we don't repay evil for evil. Two wrongs don't make a right. So in this situation, if we see someone who's in a bad spot, the answer is not to steal something from somebody else in order to try and improve their condition, because that would be responding to something wrong with something that's evil. Two wrongs don't make a right. They never do. But let me go back to Jesus. You know, we read in Luke 6 just a couple times what Jesus said. But treat others the way you would want them to treat you. Matthew 5:43-47 says, love your neighbor. Oh, come on. I thought I'd put that passage. Either way, I won't read you the actual words, all right? What I'll just say is, Jesus has said in many places that we do feed the hungry and we do clothe the poor. He says that's what his followers do. So if you follow Jesus, what do? You feed the hungry and you clothe the poor. It's, you do it out of love. You do it because you're being like Jesus, and that's what he did. So the big question for people, especially those who support Bernie Sanders, I know many Christians who do, and that's what they point to. They say, well, Jesus says to feed the hungry and clothe the poor. Therefore, it's good that we support Bernie Sanders, for example, because he wants to help them. Okay, so the government's going to help them. So therefore, we are feeding the hungry and clothing the poor. But then you ask them, okay, now just tell me, since you really want to follow Jesus, who is paying for this? Who's the ones who are feeding the hungry and clothing the poor? Oh, well, it's the 1%. The 1%ers. You know, those people, they're the ones who are going to pay for it. It's like, oh, so you're telling me that Jesus told you to feed the hungry and clothe the poor. So what you're going to do is you're going to vote for somebody, okay, who is going to steal from these other people in order to feed the hungry and clothe the poor. Guess what? You're not following Jesus at that point. You're not feeding the hungry. You're not clothing the poor. All you're doing is getting somebody else to do wrong on somebody else in order to try and improve the condition of these other people. When what you should have done is you should have just helped them. You should have been involved. You should have shown the love that Jesus shows. That's what Jesus did. He actually met with people face to face. He saw a problem and he did something about it. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So it is completely different when you or I see a hungry person or anybody who needs help, and we help them. What we're doing is we're being Jesus to them, because that's what he did. We are not being Jesus to them if we are empowering somebody else to steal from somebody else to give to them. Because at that point, you and I actually haven't given anything. We didn't help anybody. All we did was make sure that another person got hurt as well. So that's what I have to say on that. Does that sound satisfactory?
Yes. All right, well, you answer that question. I don't actually have any more questions. You pretty much covered a good percentage of what I would have wanted to ask. Are there any other bits of knowledge you would want to give to me, and maybe other pointers you want to give to anybody else that you think would be important?
Sure. Where is what I'm looking for? We read in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus is with his disciples, and James and John decided they wanted the place of honor in Jesus' kingdom. I'm sure you know the story. Yeah. They wanted to be at Jesus' right hand and his left hand, places of honor. We read in verse 25. In verse 24 we read, when the other 10 disciples heard this, they became very angry with James and John, upset with them. Imagine that. So they were trying to put themselves in a position over everybody else, okay? And then when everyone else realized they were trying to put themselves ahead of them else, they all got upset. Imagine that. Yeah. Verse 25, then Jesus called to them and said, hey, you guys know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them. The Gentiles were the ones who were not Jews. And, you know, in the Jewish culture, that's practically a dirty word. Like, ooh, those Gentiles. You know, the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them. And those in high positions use their authority over them. But it must not be this way among you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. Because just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, anytime someone in the church says they want to use government authority to do anything, to enforce a specific kind of morality, to start a war, to do any of these things, whatever, they're putting themselves, okay, above someone else. You're saying, my opinion counts more than yours. Therefore, I'm going to get the government to do what I want. Jesus says here, that's what the Gentiles do. They use their power to lord over people, to control people. Okay? That's what they do. But Jesus said, for my people, my followers, we're different. Okay? What Jesus promoted the whole time he was on the earth was Jesus on top. Okay? We all agree. Jesus is on top. We all want to be like Jesus. Jesus is our leader, and we love him so much. And guess what? Humanity, we're all on an even plane down below. We're all the same. That's why it is so gross when certain people in the church, especially, do what Jesus said not to do here, which is they do whatever they can do to get authority. And once they have it, they lord it over people, to control the world, to push their will, their agendas on other people. That's not what Jesus' followers are called to do. Jesus said, it must not be this way among you. So that's what I want to say to Christians who are listening. You know, don't be part of the problem. Don't do that. Jesus contrasted what his followers should be doing with what the world is doing. If you're using Christianity as an excuse to lord over people, you're doing the opposite of what Jesus said to do. Because that's not what we're supposed to do. We saw the ideal. We read about the ideal in Luke 6, in Romans 12. We treat each other the way we want to be treated. We don't repay evil for evil. That's what God wants.
Right,
that's pretty much it.
Well, if you want to go ahead and plug your information, your websites and all that.
Sure. My political philosophy, history, fun stuff is at peacefulanarchism.net. www.peacefulanarchism.net. So, and then I also write on the Bible and spiritual things at simpletruth.org, but that's simple-truth.org. So simple-truth.org. That's my other blog for that. And then I have all sorts of other stuff because I'm a programmer, but I'll leave those two with you today.
Yeah, programming. All right. Well, thank you for being on, Ryan. We'll probably have you on for other episodes because of all the weird issues I had to have moving a doctor's appointment. I couldn't have Christian on, so we'll have to have you on again because he would like to have you on. I know you want to talk to him too. And we can have
that'd be fun. I'd be happy to talk on other things. And this time specifically, the topic was related to the Bible. That's why you had me reading so much. Why I was reading so much scripture. But don't think that every time I come on that I will necessarily be trying to read large scripture portions.
Oh no, yeah, I didn't think you would be, but yeah, for this one it was good because I mean, I specifically wanted you to because I selfishly wanted to have this topic because I was struggling with trying to find more of this topic when I started out in my path towards libertarianism. But I'm sure Christian would like to have you on, so there's more voluntarism as opposed to my little minarchist self over here in the corner. And then you guys can have your talk about, you know, voluntary stuff, and I'll be over here reading my constitution or something.
Well, let me say just in summary one more time, all right? We read in Romans 13 that God does allow for human government, you know, to punish evildoers. But we also know from that same passage that none of the coercive state systems that we have all across the world are actually under that authority. They're acting under their own illegitimate authority. They've become gods unto themselves, not following the authority he gave them, but instead they steal money from their people. They tell their people what they can and cannot do. They hurt, they kill, they murder, they start wars. That's horrible. And God never, ever told anyone that they could do that. And we as Christians, it's our job to stand up for the ideal, for the best. And that's what Jesus did. And best is always nonviolent. Best is always peaceful. Best is always voluntary, mutually beneficial, treating others the way you want to be treated. So,
amen to that.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys. Well, if you want to hit us up, get us up on Twitter at Newborn Liberty. Can send us an email at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Search out the Facebook group, Newborn Libertarian. You can find us on Stitcher. And until next time, which hopefully will be soon, because I know it's been a long time since our last episode. Sorry about that. I was kind of busy. But until next time, this has been Ken. And thank you, Ryan, again.
My pleasure.
All right. Peace out.